Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian, whichever language you're fluent in or not fluent in. We are thrilled that you're joining us for the 40th episode of the Calcio Land podcast, a special edition reviewing the end of the summer transfer window. So today we're going to get into winners and losers for the summer. We'll do an analysis for the top teams in Serie A to see who improved, who got worse. But before we get to all that good stuff, I am joined by my excellent producer and co-host, Alex Goldberg. And I wanted to ask you, Alex, what was your transfer deadline day like?
Emotional, David. It was really emotional. I can't lie. There were some good emotions sprinkled in, but a lot of frustration from myself and much of the Chelsea fan base. Fans had their hopes up for players like Riyad Mahrez, even some for Ross Barkley, who skipped out during the medical, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain before he turned Chelsea down so he could play apparently in the midfield for Liverpool. But Chelsea did end with two signings, Danny Drinkwater, who many fans yawn at, but I still think is a very solid acquisition for the club, and then a Calcio man, David Zappacosta from Torino, a right back, but certainly a right wing back in Chelsea's formation. And right when I saw Chelsea were linked with him, I feared that many Chelsea fans would take the same approach they did last year with Marcos Alonso, insult him, say he's not good just because they barely know a thing about him. They probably know even less about Zappacosta because he's never played in the Premier League. Of course, Marcos Alonso had a cup of coffee with Sunderland. So nonetheless, whether fans are in favor of the move because they believe everything they hear positive about Zappacosta, or they're against the move because they just think if they haven't seen him, if they don't know a lot about him, he must suck. David, you know about David Zappacosta better than most. So what can Chelsea fans expect from their new Italian acquisition?
So, yeah, that signing really came out of nowhere. I think, you know, they thought they had a good chance for Oxlade-Chamberlain. That didn't come through. So Zappacosta came out really out of the blue on deadline day. In a lot of ways, you know, this move reminds me a lot of Marcos Alonso the year before. You mentioned it. I think Chelsea fans were more familiar with him since he had played in the Premier League previously, but Zappacosta, I think, brings a lot of the same attributes. He's a very good crosser. I think he's probably a little bit of a better defender than he's given credit for, although it is true that he struggled when Torino went back to the four-man defense. But I think in Chelsea's formation, he makes a lot of sense. I think at bare minimum, he is equivalent to Moses and can compete with him. I think he can probably eventually take the starting spot for him. You know, obviously, I don't think you can compare him to the best wing backs in the Champions League, but seeing where Chelsea were going into the last day, I think they could have done a lot worse. I think there's still room for growth for him. I think he fits Conte's formation well. Like I mentioned, we've seen how good Morata is on the air with headers, and I think Zappacosta is going to provide him a lot of good crosses with that. So a surprising move, but I think one that will pay off for Chelsea. As far as my transfer deadline day, big shout out to the staff on Di Marzio's English page, Z, Claudio, Fabio Paolo. Really amazing work, nowhere near stressful for me. I got up very early, though, to help out. We had some pretty big news in the morning with Niang to Torino, Inter bringing in the player from Caen. So it was a pretty exciting day. The window's still open in Spain as we're recording this and still in Turkey. So for my Turkish followers, I really don't think Asamoah is going to be leaving Juve to go to Galatasaray. I've been asked a lot about this. For one, Spinazzola didn't return to Juve. The other thing is when I look at the injuries in Juve's midfield with Marchisio and Khedira, too, got hurt, although it doesn't seem serious. The fact that Asamoah, on top of being Alexandro's backup, can also play in the midfield, and that was his original role. To me, that makes even more sense that he would stay at Juve. And a lot of Juve fans say, we always say Juve is all about the player's will, and Asamoah wanted to go to Galatasaray, but they didn't let him go. I mean, A, they weren't able to get a replacement for him, and secondly, I don't know how badly he wanted to go. Just because a player agrees to terms with another club doesn't necessarily mean they want to leave, but in Asamoah's case especially, since he had an expiring contract at the end of this season, you know, he probably can work out a deal with Galatasaray for next year, unless he's sold in January. So I think Asamoah is going to stay at Juve and provide some cover in the midfield as well.
All right, David. Well, this is going to be a special edition of Winners and Losers now that the transfer window is pretty much shut. Who are the winners and losers for the summer transfer season?
So because we are going to get to the teams individually, and we'll talk a little bit about more who did well and who didn't do so well, I wanted to really leave it as just one winner and one loser. And to me, the absolute winners of the summer transfer window have to be Milan and their sporting directors, Mirabelli and Fassone. Really an outstanding window. Now, you know, in the last days of the window, Milan fans were hoping for maybe some more. I think, too, when Young was sold for a considerable fee, many expected they would reinvest it. Then Aubameyang kind of teased them a little bit on Instagram, and Milan had announced that they were doing this event right after the transfer window yesterday online, and some people assumed it was to unveil a new signing. But that doesn't take away from what an amazing window they had. They signed 11 players, many of them starting caliber. Really amazing work. What I like about Mirabelli and Fassone has been the transparency that they've had with Milan fans, something really needed in recent years. So don't let the last few days, the disappointment of that. To me, you should praise them for building the team as early as they did. Montella, pretty much, except for Kalinic, got all his new players rather quickly. And that's so important when you have so many new players. So to me, clear winners of the summer, Milan and Mirabelli and Fassone. We'll get a little bit more in the individual moves later on for them and the other teams. To me, though, the losers have to be Inter's owners, Suning. You know, there's always this thing on Suning's financial power. And look, you know, I've talked a lot about it. I expected a lot of them after this summer. Last year, net of sales, they had spent considerably more than Juve. This season, the expectation was that they would do about the same. They were able to get to the June 30th deadline with financial fair play. They had to raise $30 million. They were able to do it without selling Perisic, which was great, but many expected a lot more. After that, we'll get into Inter's window in a minute. I think overall they had a good window. They should be happy with a lot of the business that they did, but without a doubt, Inter's owner, the Suning Group, ends up looking pretty bad this summer, especially in comparison to what Milan did on the other end. So with that out of the way, we're going to talk about some more big winners and losers as we discuss each team individually. So what I'm going to do with Alex is we're going to talk about the top teams, go over the major acquisitions, the biggest departures. I'll give you kind of my analysis. Alex, feel free to chime in too during the analysis part. And after we get through the top teams, we'll kind of summarize things for the other teams in Serie A. So, Alex, let's get started with Juve. Remind our listeners what their major acquisitions were and what their biggest departures were over the summer.
All right, you got it. Starting with the old lady, their major acquisitions were Bentancur, Douglas Costa, Bernardeschi, DeCiglio, Chesney, Blaise Matuidi, and Benedict Howadis. And their biggest departures were, of course, Leo Bonucci, Dani Alves, Neto, Lamina, and Mandragora.
So a lot of people ask me, you know, is Juve better or worse than last year? And it's a very interesting question. So the first thing that stands out to me is that Juve's strength for me went from being the defense to really having a lot of great attacking offense options up front. And this is a change of shift for Juve. They show that a lot of the recent Champions League winners were really top-heavy. So on the wings, really impossible not to deny how much better they are with Douglas Costa and Bernardeschi. I think a lot of people, even before Dani Alves was on his way out, a lot of people wanted Juve to bolster the right-back position. Hoedes can probably play there in an emergency, but DeCiglio, there's been a lot of question marks for him. He wasn't selected to Italy's national team. Seems even Allegri, who had him at Milan, is losing confidence there. So defense, to me, clearly worse. I think Bonucci, it's a big loss, especially you saw now Chiellini getting hurt. And Bonucci, to me, was the one guarantee on Juve's defense, along with Alexandro, but as far as the center backs, was the guarantee. So big loss there. I think, too, with Juve, when you ask if they're better or worse, you can't just look at who came and who left. You also have to ask yourself, you know, which of their players are going to get worse and which ones are going to get better. We've already had injuries to Marchisio, Khedira, and Chiellini, three guys that are injury-prone. Last season, Khedira was very healthy overall for his standards, but he's looked quite old. Our friend Adam Digby even thinks he's ready for the MLS phase of his career. I think that might be a little bit premature, but there's a lot of signs for concern there. You've said it, Alex. They might really regret not signing Tolisso. I think Matuidi brings some speed, some dynamic presence that they lack in the midfield, but you have to ask yourself if that's really enough. If you want to be a really cynical person, you would say that the main acquisitions on Juve, Douglas Costa and Matuidi, are basically rejects, not maybe rejects, but backup players on other clubs that they're competing with in the Champions League. We've also seen some of these players, though, come to Juve and do really well, like Mandzukic. But a reason for concern there. On the positive side for Juve, I think Bernardeschi has really the potential to become a great player. There was a lot of people that were upset Juve wasn't able to get Keita or Schick. To me, Juve made the decisions really to invest in Douglas Costa and Bernardeschi. If they could have had Keita on their terms, so fairly cheap, they would have gladly had him, but I understand why they didn't go overboard, especially because dealing with Lazio for them is quite difficult. I think for me, really, the X factor for Juve is going to be Bentancur. It was very interesting that Juve used one of their two non-EU slots on him this summer rather than loaning him to another team. That already said they had a lot of faith in him in doing that. It seems Allegri believes in him. He could really end up being an interesting X factor for them. So definitely great that Juve, too, kept Dybala. You know, I wanted to mention, too, for the winners of the summer, I think Serie A as a whole, you look at players like Bonucci and Bernardeschi and Schick in years past would have gone abroad, and they stayed in Italy, and that's really great. So great that Juve brought in Bernardeschi. Bad for Juve that Bonucci left, but at least for Serie A, he stayed there. So overall, I think an intriguing window for Juve, but you can't help but think that, you know, had Tolisso arrived, then maybe a good right back, it could have been better as well. But certainly big improvements up front. So now let's kind of go in order of where teams finished in the standings last season, Alex. So now let's go to Roma. What were their major acquisitions and what were their biggest departures?
All right, David, their major acquisitions. Let's start with Hector Moreno, Pellegrini, Karsdorp, Gonalons, Under, DeFrel, Kolarov, and certainly not least, Patrick Schick. And then the biggest departures, Spalletti. You got to start there. Totti, Szczesny, Mohamed Salah, my new Chelsea boy Antonio Rudiger, and Mario Rui. Break it down for us.
So, to me, this is a very interesting team. Look, I'm going to be upfront. I've been known for underestimating Roma in years past. You know, I don't think it's a, you know, purpose bias against them, but I will say that historically, I tend to be wrong on Roma, maybe underrating them. I was a little bit surprised by this window. To me, you look at the departures, they had some significant ones. To me, the downgrade from Spalletti to Di Francesco could be very significant. I look at their defense. Szczesny was, with Donnarumma, arguably the best goalkeeper in Serie A last season. Big pressure on Alisson, the Brazilian keeper they brought last year. Salah was definitely one of Roma's three best players last season. Rudiger, we talked about it a lot with John Solano, probably was their most consistent defender. Fazio, who they brought in last season in the four-man defense, which is, seems the one Di Francesco's pointing on right now, has really struggled. So their defense is really worrisome. To me, X factor in all this is Karsdorp, the right back who had some minor knee surgery when he arrived. He could be a really intriguing player because they really need help on defense. Luckily, they were able to keep Manolas because he didn't want to be paid in rubles before going to Zenit. So a little bit of concerns there. I think Patrick Schick is a phenomenal talent, assuming he stays healthy. I'm intrigued to see if he could play on the wing, because if not, he's just a glorified backup to Dzeko. Kolarov seems like a very solid addition as well, but I'm just not sure he and Moreno are enough to improve the defense. Gonalons and Under, they'll look like two very good additions. Gonalons arrived for dirt cheap, I think 6 million euro. Really great move there. Under, a lot of potential. I just think, though, compared to the other top teams in Serie A, no team lost more than Roma. You know, they lost their coach, was really good. Arguably the one of the best keepers in Serie A, Salah, Rudiger. So, intriguing squad there. They have the potential to take a step down, but like I've said, they've proven me wrong in the past. So now let's go to a team that hasn't changed nearly as much, a team you and I always really enjoy watching, Alex. So let's talk about Napoli next.
All right, and we will keep out for acquisitions the players that they re-sign. So it's not a big list, so here we go. The major acquisitions, Adam Unas and Mario Rui, and their biggest departures, Zapata and Strinic.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that we didn't list the extension. To me, obviously, keeping Insigne and Mertens and Koulibaly, they had signed him to an extension last year. There were rumors there was an exit clause. To me, Koulibaly was the player they absolutely could not lose. They ended up keeping Mertens, which was somewhat surprising because there were rumors he could go to China for a big payday or even to the Premier League. Great that they kept him. You know, this is, we talked about it ad nauseum on the show. It's all about continuity for Napoli. They have players that are going to get better, especially in the midfield. Unas has a lot of potential. Could be another intriguing winger that does well on the Sarri. But to me, I can't help but notice, to me, Napoli, they had an opportunity to bridge the gap even more with Juve. I think they made a mistake not getting a better goalkeeper. You know, they love Piperina. You know, they say the ball distribution for him is so important under Sarri. But I just don't think he's as good a keeper for the other top teams. I'm curious to see more of Alisson or Roma. But of the teams we're discussing today, this is really their weak link. I think they could have probably used another defender. But now they really need Maksimovic, who they invested in a lot of money last year with Torino, to come through for them. So great for Napoli that they kept all their players. They'll all be better under Sarri. But we might look back and say, you know, had Napoli just made one or two investments on the defense at the goalkeeper position, they could have challenged Juve even more. So now let's get to the next team. And I hope, Alex, because there's so many players in and out, that you had a sip of water before we get to them. So let's talk about the champions of the transfer window, Milan. So let's, Alex, what were the major acquisitions and what were the biggest departures on Milan?
Yeah, I've been breathing through my nose so I'd have enough lung capacity to read these. All right, here we go with the major acquisitions. Musacchio, Andrea Conti, Ricardo Rodriguez, Frank Kessie, Lucas Bilia, Andre Silva, Borini, and this is the big name here, Hakan Çalhanoğlu. I think I did all right there. Leonardo Bonucci, and Kalinic. And moving on to the departures, there was still a handful as well. My Chelsea boy, Mario Pasalic, Honda, Kuka, Bertolacci, Desciglio, Lapadula, Niang, and Carlos Bacca. Break it down.
Excellent. So a lot of movement. Very simply, let's look at it this way. Milan signed Kessie, who was linked to all the top clubs in the Premier League. At a time where so many teams need of quality wing backs, they signed two of the best that changed teams this summer in Atalanta's Conti and Rodriguez, who both have looked good so far. I think with the additions of Bonucci and Musacchio to go with Romagnoli, and they kept Donnarumma, to me, at least on paper, Milan has the best defense in Serie A. I think they've taken that crown from Juve again. You know, this is on paper. It's really a brand-new defense except for Romagnoli and Donnarumma. I'm going to be very intrigued. To me, the formation that makes the most sense for Milan is kind of a variation of what Conte uses at Chelsea, of 3-4-3, with Bonucci, Musacchio, and Romagnoli. And to me, the fact that no matter what formation you use, you're going to have some quality players left out really says everything about the summer that Milan had. They didn't have much talent to begin with, and they've improved a lot. Now, if you want to be more negative, you can say that last season, all the teams that finished in front of Milan had a goal scorer with over 20 goals. Milan added Andres Silva and Kalinic. Baca's gone. Cutrone has looked great. So you have to ask yourself, are Andres Silva, Kalinic, and Cutrone enough to keep up with the top strikers on the other teams? So far, Cutrone has looked great. Mixed bag for Andres Silva. So let's see. To me, that's the question there. I'm higher on Kalinic than most people, but it's undeniable that Milan's transfer window is much better. The midfield was really the area where they also needed to improve a lot. They brought in Biglia, Kessié, who's looked like the Kessié from the first half of the season at Atalanta. Biglia, once he's healthy, should bring a lot of quality. They haven't had Bonaventura back fully healthy. Hakan Calhanoglu looks like he can bring a lot of quality to the team. So, you know, all you have to do is look at the players that you added and who left. To me, it's hard to argue, except for maybe PSG or something like that, that any club in all of Europe has improved more than Milan. So I know there's a little bit of disappointment on the last-minute things, but, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. Milan's really well on their way. Great summer for them. Really important for Serie A. And because Milan got so much better, this also helps Italy, because we've seen Bonucci and Kessié and Conte stay in Italy. They brought in some players like Rodriguez, Andres Silva, Calhanoglu, Musacchio that had you know, suitors even outside of Italy. So I think it's great for Serie A as a whole that Milan's back, and hopefully this is just the beginning for them. So now let's talk about a team that finished right behind Milan, with Milan last season, Lazio. They already won the Super Cup. Alex, what were the players that came in and who left Lazio this summer?
All right, not a big, big list for Lazio. Let's start with the acquisitions. Portuguese international Nani, Lucas Leiva, Pedro Neto, and Bruno Jordão. And their major departures, not big, but certainly an impactful one, in Kita Balde, Lucas Biglia, and Hoet.
So, first off, I think Lazio deserves a lot of credit for the returns they got on Kita Balde, Biglia, and Hoet. All of these players had expiring contracts, and Lazio got, I think, let me do the math, around $60 million for players on expiring deals. Biglia was older, Hoet wasn't a full-time starter. Kita Balde, superb talent. I'm very sorry to see Kita Balde and Salah leave Serie A. So at least Lazio got a great return on these players. For Kita Balde, it was interesting that Jorge Mendes acted as the intermediary in the deal with Monaco. He worked with Lotito, got him $30 million plus bonuses for Kita Balde. And then, not surprisingly, Lazio turned around and signed two of Mendes' players in Pedro Neto and Bruno Jordão, who came from Braga. I've heard a lot of good things on them, very intriguing prospects. So, you know, somehow I think those deals are connected there. Their Nani, too, was a very surprising move, came in at the last second. Lucas Leiva should help offset, you know, potentially Biglia's departure. I think Nani with Pedro Neto should give Simone Inzaghi some options up front. It'll be interesting to see now if Kita Balde, with Kita Balde gone, if Felipe Anderson's going to play a little bit more of an offensive role. I still really like Lazio's core. They lost, you know, two significant starters in Kita and Biglia, but they still have De Vrij. They still have Parolo. They still have my boy Milinkovic-Savic. They still have Immobile and Felipe Anderson. As usual, I think a lot of people are sleeping on Lazio. I still think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with this season. The last team we're going to get into individually before I go over the best and the rest and the worst of the rest is Inter. So, Alex, what did they do this summer?
All right, David. Inter acquired Dalbert, Cancelo, Skriniar, Vecino, Borja Valero, yeah, and Caramo, and their departures were Jovetic, Banega, Gary Medel, Murillo, and Kondogbia. What do we got?
So I said it up front, you know, to me, perception-wise, Inter's owners are the losers of the summer, but let's take a step back and look at the moves that Inter made. So they hire Spalletti. Everyone has been saying maybe the most impactful acquisition for anyone in Serie A, maybe Bonucci with Milan comparable. But Spalletti, massive upgrade, two, you took him away from Roma, potentially weaken him there. So you have a manager who's known for getting the most out of the talent on the squad. Inter had a lot of talent to begin with that wasn't being made the most out of. Every Inter fan agreed that the biggest weakness on the team were the wing-back position. They invested heavily there. They brought Dalbert and Cancelo. Cancelo's hurt, unfortunately, but, you know, they did sign him. For the midfield, they brought Borja Valero, older, but a quality player. Vecino knows him, has played well with him. Skriniar has looked great for them so far. Very promising center back who was linked to Atletico Madrid. Karamoev here is a very intriguing offensive winger, so he'll rotate with Kandreva and Perisic up front. To me, very important thing to note for Inter this summer, other than hiring Spalletti, maybe their biggest win was raising that $30 million for FFP without really selling, definitely not Perisic and nobody really significant. The most important player lost there was Banega, who they had signed for free. But I think there are also some reasons for concerns. To me, one of the most puzzling moves of the summer was Inter selling both Gary Medel and Murillo, who could play at center back, without really having a replacement. So right now, they really only have Ranocchia as a veteran backup center back. Anyone who watches Serie A, you know, knows what that means. That can be trouble. Miranda already got hurt with Brazil. Very puzzling. I really don't get why they would sell both Medel and Murillo. They didn't even get that much back for them without having a replacement. But overall, I think Inter's clearly better than last season. I know there was a lot of doom and gloom by Inter fans on Twitter in the past few days. But, you know, again, they bolstered their biggest area of weakness, wingback. Vastly improved at the manager position. So I think there are some reasons for optimism there. Also, I didn't put it on the list for you. They also lost Gabigol, who went to Benfica. It's amazing. He was on Inter exactly 366 days, arrived the last day of the previous transfer window from Brazil. There was a lot of hype on him. Really, really struggled. You know, in Italy, there's a word for him, a description for him, which is oggetto misterioso. It means a mysterious object, and to me, that describes him much better than a bust. He barely played enough for us to know if he was really any good, but obviously that says a lot that Inter had so many coaches, and even Spalletti this summer, who had him all summer long, wasn't impressed with him. So we wish Gabigol the best at Benfica. He's there on loan with option to buy. So that is the top teams. I'm going to write a column for Calcio Mercato where I'll be giving a grade to all the teams, but I wanted to talk a big picture on them. I think overall for Serie A, though, very good summer. I was reading Gazzetta dello Sport today. Had a very interesting stat that 9 out of the 20 teams in Serie A broke their transfer fee record this summer. Serie A teams spent over €1 billion in transfer fees. Only the Premier League had more. So I think there's a lot of reasons for optimism in Serie A. So before we close the show, I wanted to touch upon some mid-table teams and other winners and losers in the summer. To me, Torino had a really, really good transfer window, sold Zappacosta well at the end of the transfer window, but really had bolstered the defense, bringing in Sirigo and Colu, Lianco. Then they signed Niang the last day of the transfer window. I know Milan fans were really eager to get him out of there, but he had done well for Mihailovic. He'll be an intriguing option up front with Iago Falque. Torino, of course, kept Belotti. A lot of people thought that their president was bluffing when he said he would only sell Belotti for the full $100 million exit clause. But guess what? He kept firm. Good for him. Had a lot to do with Torino having money coming in for Maximovic from the previous transfer window. So I never felt that they had to undersell him. They still kept him, and I think that's great for Serie A as a whole and Torino. We also had two newly promoted teams have a very good transfer windows. Spal, intriguing moves. They signed Borriello, in the process weakening Cagliari, a rival to try to avoid relegation. Really good move there. They also signed another veteran striker in Paloschi, who had been at Atalanta and Chievo. So intriguing moves there. Spal also signed veteran defender Felipe from Udinese. And Benevento as well, another team that made a lot of moves. Signed keeper Belek, midfielder Cataldi, striker Yemello, who has a good reputation. They brought back Lazar from Newcastle, who had done pretty well at Palermo. So good to see newly promoted teams acting, you know, in the transfer market well to try to stay in Serie A, make this season a little bit more balanced. As far as two losers, I have two teams that I think really struggled this summer. Now, we talked a lot as far as a loser in the summer, Fiorentina, all the players that they lost, Kalinic, Barzavallero, Vecino, their former captain, Rodriguez, Bernardeschi to bitter rival Juventus. Sure, they've made some intriguing moves coming in. Simeone, Benassi, good move. I also like that they signed Thoreau, a very older striker, but old but very underrated player overall. You know, they brought in a lot of young players, but there's really a lot of pressure for Fiorentina to do well. They're not off to a good start of the season. And another team that I think should be very concerned this summer is Thoreau's former team, Udinese. I'm very puzzled that they would sell him. He was by far their best striker. They are very thin up front. They are counting mainly on former Carpi striker Lasagna and a younger player Perica to do well up front. So I think Udinese has some reasons for concerns. It seems to me their owners, the Pozzo, have been more interested in Watford than Udinese recently. So those are Udinese and Fiorentina. I wouldn't be shocked if one of them gets relegated. I know that might sound pretty bold, but we're looking at the newly promoted teams, how they tried to improve on the transfer market. You know, they'll be one out of Udinese and Fiorentina could be competing with Crotone and the newly promoted teams to avoid relegations. So this was our review of the summer transfer window. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back next Thursday to preview week 3 in Serie A. I want to take an opportunity to thank all you guys for supporting the podcast. We've already done 40 episodes this summer. We did usually 3 episodes a week, so great job, Alex, keeping up. We really appreciate the support. The way you can help us is by subscribing, retweeting, telling friends about our podcast. If you listen to it on iTunes, please leave a review. That really helps. When we come back, we're going to be focusing more on Serie A. We'll still talk a little bit about the other leagues as well. We'll take a break from transfer stuff for a while, so I'm eager to get back to the pitch stuff, and we'll keep bringing in great guests. And we really want to thank you for your support. You make all this worthwhile, so thanks again.